Welcome to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. I have a returning guest to the show today, and that is lead pastor of Calvary Church, Nick Poole. Nick, thank you so much for coming on the show today. You are such an inspiration in Westmoreland County and throughout the community. You do so much. I don't know how you do it all. How do you keep it all straight?
I have no idea. Just, I guess, a good calendar.
Good time management skills, I think, for sure. Well, one of the reasons I asked you to be on the show today is because every time I go to a meeting for a community event, they're always talking about how Calvary is helping out in some way, that you're really outside the four walls of the church and in the community. For instance, you know, parking for the Light Up Norwin parade and shuttles and, you know, marching in the parade, whatever it is. In fact, today I was just looking on social media and I saw you were already at a Rotary meeting today. So I don't know how you manage all that, but you do a great job. So let's start by talking about you, where you grew up, your education, what called you to this ministry, and then we can go from there.
Yeah. So I was born in the Beaver County Medical Center, Beaver County, but really was raised in Westmoreland County. I lived in Latrobe from halfway through my kindergarten year to after I graduated high school. So my dad was a pastor, and my mom and dad both were born and raised in Westmoreland County. My mom grew up in Irwin. She graduated from Norwin in 1976, and my dad graduated from Southmoreland. So this county is kind of our home. It's where I grew up and what I know. And so in 2000, I graduated from high school, went to Bible college at Central Bible College in Springfield, Missouri, graduated from there, and came to Calvary to be the youth pastor. Was youth pastor here for a couple years, went on staff at a church in the North Hills of Pittsburgh, Allison Park Church, as a church planting director, which means I helped start new churches throughout the Pittsburgh area, coached the pastors, supported them, resourced them as they launch and all of that. And then in 2011, February, got a phone call. The pastor I'd worked for here at Calvary had a sudden massive heart attack at the age of 45 and passed away.
Oh, Nick, that's
so my wife and I, long story short, throughout that year, went through a whole interview process with the church, but we were elected as the new pastors on July 31st of 2011. So that's kind of our journey to be here. And ministry, as I said, my dad was a pastor. And I was just around church a lot my whole life. And honestly, I didn't really have a moment where God spoke to me like, you're supposed to be a pastor. Mm-hmm. It's just something I've always wanted to do and just always felt like it's what I was supposed to do. So my mom's side of the family, all my aunts married pastors. So all my cousins, there's seven of us, we're all pastors' kids. And we used to go to my grandparents' house here in Irwin, and we would have church services in our basement, kids. We'd play church. And so it's just something that we've all been around, and I was around a lot. And, in middle school, I went to Derry. I remember we took aptitude tests, and, our guidance counselor sat down with us and talked about like, hey, here's different fields as you get ready to go into high school. Maybe you can think about and look at pursuing. And, I remember sitting down with a guidance counselor and I said, I know you're going to give me some different fields or anything, but I just want to be a pastor. So they're like, but you could do this and that. I'm like, but I get that, but I just want to be a pastor. That's all I want to be. That's all I feel I'm supposed to be. That's what I feel called to do. And honestly, like, as long as I can remember all the way back, that's really the thing that I just always felt like I wanted to do and enjoyed doing.
And now, not only are you the pastor, you're the head IT guy, the HR guy, the marketing person, right? Is that right? Am I crazy?
I mean, something like that. We have a staff, so I don't have to do all of that stuff. But yeah, I mean, at different stages. When I first came to Calvary in 2011, I was the only full-time pastor. I was the only pastor on staff. So I did all of that marketing and coordinating the leaders for kids ministry and making sure the bulletins get done and all of it. I mean, it's a lot. As a pastor, you're kind of the breadth of what you have to do and be responsible for is pretty significant. Fortunately, you know, 11 and a half years later, we have staff, and I don't have to do all of those details anymore. Right on the ground, I get to help empower them and equip them to do that.
More strategy work. Absolutely. So let's talk about the church, the campus. What other things are on that campus and what else you offer there?
So we have Calvary Preschool Center, which is a preschool, daycare, kindergarten. Mm-hmm. So it goes, daycare starts age two, all the way up through school age. Next fall, well, not next fall, this fall, 2023, we are going to be adding infant care. So that'll be exciting. But then it goes, so that's childcare, but then we also have preschool, which they're going through a specific curriculum, 2-year-old, 3-year-old, 4-year-old, and then kindergarten, and the curriculum builds on itself. So by the time we get to kindergarten, you know, kids can, they're already aware of their letters and numbers and colors. And so they can kind of go into kindergarten with a step ahead, and it's, you know, half day and full day kindergarten. So we have both of those options. That's up to the parents' choice. But it's a private school that has been around now since 1974. So it's been around for a few decades here. Really effective program, great staff. There's about 160 kids or so, given depending on kind of the year and the time of the year, but somewhere in that range that are part of the program. So that's on site during the week. And then, of course, we have the church. So we have different activities and things that we do throughout the week.
And you have that social, you have that social center on there as well, right?
What do you mean by that?
Is there, it's like a social hall there too that people can get?
We want to get to that. We don't want
to get to
yet.
That. Okay.
We would love to get a community center. That's one of the dreams.
All right.
Should the budget, should we figure out the financial part of that? So if anyone's listening and wants to invest in that, you know, a few million bucks here, we could do it. So we have about 17 acres, you know, right on in North Huntington, Irwin. So part of our property is in Irwin Borough, and the majority of it's in North Huntington. But we have about 17 acres. So we have a lot of land, great facilities, but also have land to build. So we have worked on some drawings for a new school building at some point. So we have those done. Just once again, figure out the details of the finances and all that. And long term, I would love to be able to build a community center that can serve the community better.
Good. Now, that preschool and daycare, does that help offset some of the costs for the ministries?
It does a little bit, not much. The church and the school pretty much self-sufficient and independent. I mean, they are connected. We have, you know, a separate board for the school.
Okay. And that's mission driven.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. Mm-hmm. 100% for sure.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Well, you're very active in the community as well. Why don't you tell us a little bit about reaching outside the four walls of the church?
Yeah. So, you know, there are different, I guess, approaches to church and ways that churches function. And just one of my strong beliefs and convictions, I guess, is that as a church, we don't want to just exist for the gathering of people inside our buildings, but mm-hmm. we want to really exist to send people out to impact the community around us, that our value isn't just in what we do inside our building, but really in how we can affect the community around it. And I hope that, you know, if our church ever ceased to exist, that our community would miss us. Mm-hmm. And that we're not just a church that's positioned or placed in a community, but we are actually active throughout the community. And that's just a strong value of ours, a passion of ours. So we are just always looking for ways that we can help serve our community. We want to make our community a better place. We want to make sure that the Norwin community is better because Calvary Church is here. And so that's mobilizing our people, that's, you know, mobilizing resources, using influence, whatever we can do. So just recently, we do a Sunday every year called our Hero Sunday, where we honor and appreciate local first responders and veterans. And so we always have a guest speaker that day. So this year, our guest was kind of a conversation that I've been wanting to have in our Norwin community specifically, I think is important, which is a conversation about race and reconciliation. Mm. So we were able to have two individuals. One guy, he served as the Grand Dragon of the KKK in the state of Indiana in the late 70s.
Wow.
Other man is an African-American man, grew up in the South. His brother was killed by two white men. Both had strong anger and hate for the other race. That's how they were raised, and just their experiences kind of brought them to that place. And today both men are very close friends. They would consider themselves, they quote unquote brothers. They're both professors. They both are doctors, educational doctors. They're professors at a school in Florida, Southeastern University, actually teach a course together. So we had a conversation about how does that happen? How do you come to that place? So for me, that was more than just a church service, but that was an opportunity to have a conversation in our community to make it better.
Some of the details, and how was it like a conversion of heart that they had to be able to?
Yeah, for both of them. I mean, Dr. Harris, who's the man who was the Grand Dragon, he kind of worked his way up through the KKK organization, got to the national level, was appointed as the chaplain of the KKK, which they actually surprisingly have chaplains. He had never read the Bible before, but you know, the guy in charge said, hey, just read the Bible and pick a few verses out and throw it in some of your speeches, and that's all you need to do. So he starts reading the Bible, and as he's reading the Bible, he starts to realize, wow, all this stuff we talk about in the KKK is contrary to what I'm reading in the Bible. And as he read it, it actually changed him. Isn't that crazy? He read the Bible and it started to transform his heart. And he got to a point where he said, I can't do this anymore. And generally speaking, you don't get out of the KKK alive or without some kind of retribution. But he got out and he had to vow to never speak about it, which that didn't last real long. But he actually had to be relocated to Florida, where he's at now, because of some of the threats and things that were offered against his family and himself.
Wow. And then there's the other side, the other speaker who had to offer forgiveness. Yeah. I mean,
Dr. Stevens, he's a great man. He actually served in the military and has really walked through this amazing place of healing and forgiveness. Mm-hmm. It was a really powerful conversation just to hear the dynamics. And for me, I mean, you're familiar with the Norman community. Like, it's a very white community. Last census, 97.1% white. Mm-hmm. You don't get much whiter than that, mm-hmm, without being like commune almost. Mm-hmm. It's just a very white community. And because of that, some of these conversations about race kind of get pushed under the radar. Mm-hmm. And this was just another opportunity I felt to say, hey, let's talk about something that I believe ties into our faith, but also ties into our community. Mm-hmm. And that's how we view people. How we view people who are different than us, how we view people who maybe come from different places than us or have a different color skin than us. And sometimes, having been in this community for a long time, you know, my great grandmother moved here in November of 1900. So my family's been here for, you know, over a century. That's not something this community has gotten right historically. Mm-hmm. So before something tragic happens, let's have the conversation now. It's dangerous, but yeah. You know,
how was it received by the people who attended?
Very well. I could say for we invited a lot of different people from our school district and just in the community. But from the feedback I got from both men, they were out in the our lobby signing books and talking to folks afterwards, and it seemed like it was really well received. It was a difficult conversation, but I think an important one.
Very interesting. And that was held right at the church.
That was a Sunday morning. Yep.
Right. And so you were able to accommodate. How big is the facility?
Our sanctuary seats about 700. Mm-hmm. We have that. And then we have like our youth auditorium can seat, I don't know, maybe 100, 120. That's in our family center. So,
wow. Yeah. So
it's a larger facility. I mean, it was built in 1985, our sanctuary was, and the church back then was running, you know, 800 or so. Mm-hmm. It was built, I mean, because they were busing, they had eight, nine buses. They'd bus people from all over the county into the church back then. And it was an exciting time.
Excellent. Wow. Really interesting conversation today with lead pastor Nick Poole of Calvary Church in Irwin, talking about leaving the four walls of the church and going out into the community to make it a better place. You're listening to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. Fascinating conversation today with lead pastor Nick Poole of Calvary Church in Irwin. Very involved in the community. you know, just really making it a priority to make sure that you reach out and go out and make the community a better place. So what else is on the agenda?
Yeah, so we've, you know, as we look over a new year, we always try to look for opportunities to serve and to be a blessing. So we've gathered, you know, our community leaders together for meals, you know, with our township manager and borough manager and school district superintendent and president of the chamber, director of the library, like the people in our community that really are the ones who are making the big decisions and also face the big problems. And mm-hmm. we want to make sure that we're not just projecting what problems we think are there, but mm-hmm. we want to meet the needs that are there that they see. And so we try to look for opportunities to serve and get our people out in the community to, you know, clean up garbage or, you know, help at the library, pack books or serve in our school district, also projects. So in February, we always introduce projects to our church through what we call our Calvary Cares campaign. Mm-hmm. And our Calvary Cares campaign, we ask our church to pledge or commit to give above and beyond their tithe, what they normally give to the church, to give to the Calvary Cares campaign. And 100% of what's given to that, we give it away. Two different projects that we adopt. And our goal in that is really just to say, hey, we want to be a blessing and push our resources to the edge, not to starve ourselves. You know, like I said, we have larger facilities and we try to take good care of them, but we want to recognize that what God has blessed us with, whether it's time, our money, our influence, our skill, or our ability, like God has blessed us with that so that we ultimately can be a blessing to others. So we strive really hard to try to look for those needs and opportunities to be there. I think over the last 100 years, the church in America has really kind of retreated from its place in society, and we've given that place up to other wonderful, wonderful organizations like the Red Cross or the Salvation Army or the United Way. Like these are great organizations who are doing so much good for our world and for our country. And we're thankful for that. But I believe that the church should be right there with them. Mm-hmm. And we may not have the resources of organizations like that, but we can still mobilize and make a difference, at least right here in this community, that in Norwin, if there's a need, if there's something that needs done, hey, we want to be at least on the short list to say, how can we help? How can we serve? What can we do to be there to provide?
That's very interesting. What are you seeing as some other pressing needs in the community? You know, what are you hearing and seeing about drug and alcohol abuse?
I mean, I always say there's kind of three D's, I think, that are big in this community, at least: drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. And that has gotten way worse in the last 2 years. It's mm-hmm. like, it's just spiked, skyrocketed. Mm-hmm. Kind of a counter to that oftentimes the two intertwine, is depression. Mm. Just emotional mental health is really struggling. And those two unfortunately get really intertwined. When you mix a substance, drugs or alcohol with depression, it's an ugly combination. And in a community like Norwin, where the poverty isn't as visible, oftentimes the struggles are internal. Mm-hmm. And people struggle with depression that no one would ever know.
Yep.
Like the happiest person at your workplace or in your neighborhood goes home and they are deeply depressed. Mm-hmm. And is it something that they can talk to someone about comfortably? So drugs and alcohol, I think, are big. You know, just because someone lives in a nice house or a nice neighborhood doesn't mean they don't struggle with those things. But also depression. I think the last one is divorce. Mm. And just relationships in general. The last 3 years have destroyed marriages, have destroyed family relationships, over things that you would never think, you know, over politics, over response to COVID, over, you know,
isolation. People, I think isolation
for yeah. sure. I mean, isolation has caused people to sometimes be introspective, which scares them. They're not happy with what they see, but also has caused them to end up in an echo chamber where some of their things that maybe normally might be like, nah, that's a little crazy, was reinforced and solidified. And then that polarization happened. And I've watched families separate, couples separate. Like it's difficult. And people don't know how to handle the relationships and the relational strife. And in marriages, really the default is, hey, this isn't working, let's just get divorced. But I feel strongly that, hey, love is worth fighting for. And if it's something that's rough, that's okay. That's part of a relationship. It's not like something's wrong. It just means you work on it. And that's, you fight for and work on the things that are most important. And that's something I think is important. So I think in this community, those are kind of through the bigger issues in our community. Those aren't all things that are easy to
no serve. I was gonna say that's like boiling the ocean to solve some of those problems,
but in this community, I mean, it's struggle, because if you go into the inner city Pittsburgh, or you go into a community that's more urban, I guess, mm-hmm. Dealing with a drug alcohol problem, it's very visible, and people mm-hmm. are just out front with
that's
it
right.
And you are able to meet those needs in a better way. You know, I went with my church planning, I'd worked with recovery homes throughout the city of Pittsburgh. We had them scattered in different places, and men and women would come into these homes, and they'd live there for 6 months and really get their lives straightened out and cleaned up and everything. In a middle class or upper middle class community, you can't do that. I mean, these people are working, you know, six-figure jobs. You can't just move into a home, you know, and walk away from your family or your job, or like, it's a unique dynamic. And the same is true with divorce. Like, no one wants to talk about that until it's too late. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it's just, you know, well, we're just going to separate. We're going to go our separate ways. And it just didn't work out. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, depression, of course, it's become, I think, more common, and people are more comfortable to talk about it than before.
I think so too. I think the stigma is starting to lighten on that.
Which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. It's so good. But that's still, man, it's still something we need to talk more and more and more about, that people normalize the idea of going to a therapist, going to a counselor. You know, I had a good friend in my life about 3 or 4 years ago, was talking to me about how he goes to see a counselor. I was like, well, that's weird. Like, there's nothing wrong with you. Or he said, no, you know, I feel that seeing a counselor is like preventative maintenance, just like you do with your car. So he goes, you know, every 6 weeks. And I was like, oh, wow. So I started, and every month I see a therapist, a counselor, and it's not because everything's horrible in my life right now. There are definitely times that it is, but it's preventive maintenance. It's, I know every month I have someone that I can talk to that is, everything I talk to them about is safe there. And they are a professional that can help me process things in a healthy way and unpack things in a healthy way, so that I can be healthier mentally and emotionally, so I can be a better husband and pastor and father and leader and all of that. And I hope more and more people could grasp that. And especially in this community, that's okay. And that's normal. And that's good. You don't balk at someone going to the doctor for a physical checkup. So what's wrong with going to a counselor, a therapist, a medical professional, for a mental or emotional checkup?
Absolutely. Now, during COVID, you know, to try to break up some of that isolation, I know you had started to stream some of your services and things like that. Now, do you find yourself here months and years later? Are you hybrid approaching it, or are you all in person, or how does that work?
No, we were streaming. We started streaming in 2015, I think. Mm-hmm. So we've been streaming a little bit before.
Okay. So you had the infrastructure built already.
Yeah. We kind of amped it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. We still stream Facebook and YouTube every week. And it is definitely a hybrid, where, you know, people come in person less frequently than they did before, but they're still watching online. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they can still grasp kind of what's happening. It's not the same. It's kind of the idea of, you know, just because you watch a workout on YouTube doesn't mean you're in shape. Mm-hmm. You can watch it 100 times. You're still not in shape.
I love that analogy. That's fantastic.
It's true. There's like a participation part of church mm-hmm. that is important. And there's nothing better than being in a room and hearing kind of the voices and worship and being there to experience the presence of God and the relationships that take place. So you can still get, you know, all of that as far as the worship and the message and all the information, everything on a live stream, but you miss out on some of the intangibles, I guess, that you get with an in-person service.
Yeah, makes total sense.
We still offer both.
Makes total sense. So As you said about the, you know, the church taking a back seat, you know, so now what is your role and how do you attract new members? How do you get people involved? How do you welcome them?
So for us, we just want to be present in the community. So attracting people, I don't know. My kind of, I guess, posture or approach with that is we just want to make sure that we're doing things that our community wants mm-hmm. and needs. Mm-hmm. So that we're not just doing what we normally do. You know, we do events and different activities and every year we evaluate them and say, hey, is this something that's actually meeting a need, or are we just perpetuating the same thing over and over again?
Right.
We don't want to just perpetuate the same things over and over again. We want to make sure that we're meeting a need. So there are things that we stop doing because they're just useless. Not that they're useless, but they're just basically a routine. They're not being effective at meeting a need. And we want to make sure they're meeting a need. So whether that's serving or an event we do on our property or with our services, we want to make sure that we are connecting the problems of our world with a God that we believe that can meet them. Mm-hmm. And if we can continually keep that connection in view and in context, it helps us do things effectively. And we don't want to just do things in a way that, hey, you come and see, mm-hmm. we want to go and mm-hmm. serve. Mm-hmm. And I feel that our effectiveness as a church isn't in how many people we can gather in one right. place, but how many people can we send out mm-hmm. to transform our community?
Okay, so if people want to learn more, they want to donate, they want to watch a service, they want to get involved with one of your projects in the community, why don't you tell us all the ways that they can find you?
Yeah, on our online, you can go to calvaryirwin.com. And calvaryirwin.com has, you know, all the different things that we do and all of that. If you want to see what we're doing through our Calvary Cares campaign, you can go on that website, or an easier kind of straight link would just be calvarycarescampaign.org. So calvaryirwin.com or calvarycarescampaign.org. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, just Calvary Irwin. And you can find us there. And we'd love to connect with people and see how we can serve you.
Or they can find you at a Rotary meeting. They can find you at a
school board meeting. I'm involved with Rotary. We're involved with Lions. My son is an honorary member of the Lions Club because he's too young. He's only 8.
Yeah, why don't you give a quick shout out to your family and your wife? How many?
For sure. So my wife, Heidi, we've been married for 11 years. She's a third grade teacher in Shaler Area School District. And then I have 4 kids, Zachary, who's 8, Evelyn, who is 5, Lucas, who is 3, and then Addie Mae, who is about a year and a half. So.
Wow. You got your hands full and you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
I know the Norwin community appreciates you and everything that you do. Nick Poole is the lead pastor at Calvary Church in Irwin. He gave you all the ways to check him out. We thank you and we look forward to hearing more about the progress you make with Calvary Cares throughout 2023. Thanks for joining us today, Nick.
No problem. It's an honor. Thank you for having me.
If you're interested in being a guest on Westmoreland Community Connections through charitable outreach or community service that your organization is performing, please contact WHJB. We're happy to have you on the show. You're listening to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. Thanks for listening.